This is KWAI, Honolulu, 1080 on the AM dial.
Tuned into KWAI K108 1080 AM right here on a Sunday morning. It's the first day of March, brand new month, and right now it's the Carol Cox program here. And today we have the Tuskegee Airmen again joining us, Alex Jefferson and Bill Holloman. So let's get the show on the road. Here's Carol Cox.
Hey, good morning, and thank you. Another beautiful day here in Honolulu, and I'm happy to have back Mr. Bill Holloman and Alexander Jefferson. Now, one of the reasons I'm just enjoying having you anyway and spending time with you, but by midweek we had approximately 2,000 downloads on the website for your show, and the numbers are still coming in. I've had a combination of 41, 44 phone calls and emails of people asking, kids and adults and pilots and model builders, airplane builders and what have you, and just wanted to have you back. And so thank you for accepting the invitation, and I appreciate it, and I'm sure they... So if you have any questions and you want to talk directly to Mr. Bill Holloman or Mr. Alexander Jefferson of the Tuskegee Airmen, please feel free to call us here at 524-1080, and you can pick us up at carolcox.com. That's carolcox.com. All righty. Good morning, gentlemen, and thank you for coming back and joining me.
Good morning.
Good morning,
morning.
Carol.
And yeah, I'm glad you're here too.
Yes,
and I've spent some good quality time, if we describe it, that took a walk through Chinatown last week, and
fascinating.
You were really, the two of you were impressed with the quote strange fruit.
Not yes,
to, not to talk about Billie Holiday, but the the longans and the rambutans and the, you know, so
introduced
the soursop. Yeah, so you really got to see the true strange fruit. So, but and they're really tasteful. Huh?
Yeah, that's very good.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Yeah, so. So, anyway, Alex, what's been going on, and what would you like to share with us, some of the listeners out there?
One of the questions I think one of the young people was asking, what happens when we were starting out on a mission? Well, very, very little radio chatter, because this we take care of this in training. We start out, commander in his plane, and much of it is by hand signals. Billy, what kind of hand signals did we watch the leader and he would rotate his hand, rotate his finger, which means
that start your rotation,
start your engines, and automatically you turn the switch and prime the engine. I think the throttle is 1 inch, and you prime it a couple of times and turn the key, and she started.
Hold it. Turn what key?
There's a switch. Turn the switch.
Okay.
Flip the switch. And the old engine start. Pull it back. Idle.
And that smell of kerosene, that jet fuel.
There's no kerosene.
The jet fuel, or what fuel did you use?
We used 145 octane.
High octane.
Oh, that's right, in the P-40.
Engine aircraft. They use a fuel like your automobile. It's a higher octane.
Okay.
Ordinarily, if you go to the gas station, it's 87 octane. Well, that's the minimum. What's the next?
Yeah, 92. And in aviation fuel, equivalent was 90-95. The next one up was 115.
How many horsepower?
It's higher. The higher the numbers, the higher the octane, and the more combustion you have in your engine.
Mm-hmm. The Merlin engine is a V12, and 1700 horsepower. Of course, the P47 with that big radial engine, the 2830, that was close to 2,000 horsepower.
Yeah.
Which had high octane.
As we went to different engines with turbines, then we went to kind of a jet fuel, JP1.
Okay. But it was exciting.
Uh-huh. And then
it was exciting
jet.
And in combat with 64, 75, 80 P-51s starting up and emitting a lot of smoke, and the excitement of the mechanics running around, all the pilots starting, and it was exciting.
I see. What did your training microphone here? What did your training consist of when you first started out? One of the questions was asked.
In primary, starting off?
Yeah, primary. How did they prepare you?
Teaching you how to keep the airplane level. Teach you not to move the controls too much, over-controlling the airplane.
Now, did you have simulators in those days?
No.
No simulators.
No, we had what we called link trainers.
Uh-huh.
Which was similar to we've come a long ways in our technology because the simulator is a replica of the real cockpit.
Uh-huh.
And with the cost of fuel so high, we've come to use the simulator in place of the airplane.
Uh-huh.
For example, when I was training in the 737, I had 22 hours in the simulator before I ever touched controls of the aircraft.
I see.
in reality, we can do everything in the simulator because the cockpit is exactly the same as the aircraft.
Mm-hmm.
And everything is in the same. And, you know, we don't have to look at the controls. We know where they are, and all you do is this. It's like a real first-class piano player. You know, Stevie Wonder doesn't see the keys, but he can play the hell out of it.
Right.
Piano.
Learning how to fly an airplane is typically like learning how to drive a car. I tell young people, you have an instructor. The instructor teaches how to put your foot on the gas, put your foot on the brake, the gears, and you know where the instruments are automatically. You know where every instrument is, and you can touch every instrument, and you have it in your mind. And first time, of course, and I started out in steerman. Slow, airplane, two-place, with your instructor sitting behind you, in front of you. Behind you or in front of you?
He was in front of us.
In front. And what's top speed?
But
60 miles an hour,
yeah.
Coming in land at
80.
80, coming in land nice and slow. Then you process from one slow airplane up to another. Each airplane goes a little faster. The PT-13 in basic is metal.
Yeah, 110.
110. And you proceed another two or three months into the advanced trainer.
150.
And you finally graduate and get your wings and become a second lieutenant. By that time, all the time you are training in discipline, learning how to fly and what to do and how to react. It comes
to discipline. Repetition is the key to flying. I noticed you're watching a movie and they got this guy to show action.
Uh-huh.
They got him moving the controls around.
That's false.
That doesn't really happen.
That's false.
You move the controls coordinated.
Very slowly, very deliberately, with all none of the
jerky, exciting. And
you know, that's for the show.
Right, I see.
But you can't fly.
And in combat, there's nobody calling, I see you, I'm going to get you, you got my buddy, I'm going to shoot you down. That's strictly Hollywood. Strictly Hollywood.
It get you killed if you and get your other crew members and all.
You know, communication. Too much, you tell the enemy where you are.
Mm-hmm.
See, they have ways of tracking you. We have you get a fix on a guy when you hear him talking.
Mm-hmm.
Of course.
And they can come and get you.
And they can triangulate and get you and move in on you.
Yeah.
You have 65 or 75 other airplanes in the air, and that's chatter.
Right.
And you cannot have them yakking between each other. The airways would be cluttered, and nobody would hear anything going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, the when did you first experience G-force? Now, you were in that steersman. I don't know if you experienced it.
Of course, you didn't.
Yes. And what did it feel like when you first got that sense? Bill, you had flown before.
It's the same thing as a person who's driving a car and you turn a corner real fast. You tend to go, you're thrown to the outside of the curve.
Mm-hmm.
Even in the steersman, as slow as it is, when you pull a real sharp, pull in a sharp turn, and
feel the G-force.
Mm-hmm. You feel the G-force, which tends to throw you to the outside of the circle. That's what we call the G-force.
Mm-hmm.
And of course, the faster you go,
the more the G-force.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to consider 9 G's the maximum
mm-hmm.
the body could take.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in other words, you pull 9 G's, you black out.
Well, that would take.
Well, you know,
that would take a jet.
Yeah,
you can't do that in a small airplane.
Yeah, you have a difficult time in a steerman,
mm-hmm.
of pulling. It's out of control when you pulling 7 G's.
Well, the airplane itself cannot. A steerman, small airplane, could not take more than 2.
Oh no, they could probably go 4 or 5 G's.
4 or 5 G's.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
What about a small airplane like Cessna 152? The wings wouldn't hold that much.
No.
I see.
In non-aerobatic aircraft, they're not stressed
They're not built for that in the first place.
Mm-hmm. But
just like in your automobile,
in high speed aircraft, you can pull G force because of speed and centrifugal force.
Mm-hmm.
Does that make sense?
Oh yeah,
that makes sense.
Makes sense.
Sure.
Now, oxygen. When you graduated up to the bigger planes and you owned missions, how did you deal with the need for oxygen, and how did you regulate that?
As you go up in what we call altitude, mm-hmm. density altitude.
At 12,000 feet, it automatically comes on.
Mm-hmm. The air gets thinner the higher you go.
Mm-hmm.
And so, at a certain point, your lungs cannot generate enough intake to make up for the lack of oxygen at that altitude. And generally, 10,000 feet was the altitude.
For safety reasons.
That we use. You're above 10,000 feet for 30 minutes, you should have oxygen. Go up there for a short period of time. Hell, I've gone to 18,000 feet without oxygen.
Mm-hmm. What plane were you flying then?
On P-40s.
Okay. P-40s.
B-25s.
Mm-hmm.
Different airplanes.
Any airplane.
Go up that altitude. But for safety reasons, after 10,000 feet.
It would automatically. Did you put an oxygen mask on when we started out on a mission?
I usually put my oxygen mask on at the beginning.
At the beginning?
On takeoff.
Because
of
so many
other... The reason is I'm busy doing other things.
Yeah. So you don't want to pass out?
No, I don't want to, as I'm passing through a certain altitude.
Right.
Up there fiddling around putting my oxygen mask on.
Right.
We're too busy. Getting in formation.
Yeah, the guys that smoke, I got to have that last cigarette. And they take the oxygen mask off. They're fumbling around. Number one, they don't know when they have fumes leaking in the cockpit. So they take chances.
And, and these were these days that everything hadn't been proven in the research and all of that. So you guys were right on the cutting edge of where there could be mistake, disaster, and everything else.
Huh? Yeah. Hypoxia took over, and there are no warnings.
Yeah.
Guys just pass out. We have pressure chambers that we trained in.
Mm-hmm.
And guy was pissing up there, and he's talking.
And it all
normally, and all of a sudden, he's gone. He's unconscious.
Right.
He never feels it.
And no symptoms, no warnings.
No.
And so you're in formation, and if you're not prepared, you can just pass out.
That's right.
It's a lack of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
Lack of oxygen going into your blood system, which leads to your brain. And if the brain doesn't get the oxygen, it just automatically deletes. Bingo.
Mm-hmm.
You pass out.
Lights out.
Mm-hmm.
And did you ever have the experience or have any of your missions or anything like that? Nothing, huh?
I never experienced it.
No.
Now, I noticed in this Tuskegee Airmen movie, there's one where they, I think there was one movie or something I was watching, one guy faded off into the sunset. What's the truth to that?
Well, that's possible.
That's possible. And we might have lost two or three guys due to lack of oxygen.
Mm-hmm.
In fact, Faulkner is said to have departed from the formation and started off slowly.
He just
went right on in.
Off, they called him and he doesn't respond.
We suspect it was lack of oxygen. What do you call it? Hypoxia.
Yeah. So he was in formation. You're flying on a mission and then he just fades off.
Fade out of the formation. They called him.
He's not controlling the aircraft.
He just went on in.
Wow.
What are the possibilities?
Well,
maybe his oxygen supply failed.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe itself failed. We have no idea.
I see. So you've left the runway and you've gathered in your formation and where are you going? What was one of the missions?
Whatever the target for that day was.
Mm-hmm.
Our higher headquarters selected
That's
the most meaningful target.
Mm-hmm.
To our objective.
Mm-hmm.
at that time.
Our objectives were picked by higher headquarters.
Yeah. We didn't pick
strategies, planning, and...
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. For example, when we went to Ploiesti...
Mm-hmm. Oil fields in Romania.
The oil fields in Romania.
That's right.
You're trying to cut down on the enemy's supplies. If they don't have fuel, they can't get in the air.
Uh-huh.
You take the ball bearing factories, we target on those because they you can't make ball bearings,
mm-hmm.
they can't make the parts for the engine, they can't build the airplane.
They're different targets.
So you eliminate the the ability for them to make the planes
mm-hmm.
by eliminating key parts. And ball bearings was one of the...
Getting rid of those key components in their fighting machine.
Yeah.
Oil, different manufacturing parts.
Tank plants or whatever.
Exactly.
What are some of the, if you could, some of the missions that you, by name, some of the sites that the Tuskegee Airmen went to?
You keep saying Tuskegee Airmen.
Okay.
You know, we weren't Tuskegee Airmen in World War II.
No, you weren't.
We were the Red Tails, or we
Period.
Were the... they usually called us by our unit designation.
332nd Fighter Group.
Yep.
Right. Well, true now, but, you know, for me, the 92nd went until the 332nd and on and on and on. So, you know, yeah, I wouldn't, but for me, you know, it's like the Buffalo Soldier. The Buffalo Soldiers, I know it historically, were with the American Indian era, but in fact, the Buffalo Soldier fought in Tuscany and those areas too.
No, because at that time there were four fighter groups in Italy, escorting the B-17s, B-24s, covering them from Italy up into Germany. From Italy to France, or Italy to Romania,
mm-hmm.
Italy to Poland.
Mm-hmm.
And the tails of our planes were painted red, air identification. The 52nd Fighter Group was yellow. The 31st was red and white stripe. And the 325th was a black and yellow checkerboard.
Mm-hmm.
And every time they saw us, we were simply the red tails,
the
escorting
red.
The B-17s and B-24s top cover to prevent the German fighters from knocking them down.
And that was pre-planned. The colors, which the scheme was chosen by upper level excellence,
right.
And not George. Lawrence Fishburne in the Tuskegee.
Saying, there's red paint. Okay, you paint it completely red.
Rather romantic that's when you watch the movie. You go, oh, that's how they got. You go away thinking that's how they got to be the red tail.
Where a second lieutenant could control the color of an entire group.
Yeah,
that's ridiculous.
Well, that's the joy of Hollywood. You can lie, and
well,
more lie.
Another instance where Eleanor Roosevelt was being flown by a cadet or by a lieutenant. That's a
program hadn't even started when she flew with Chief Anderson
in 1940.
Really?
See, with a civilian.
Well, I guess
a Piper Cub.
But they say history goes to the way the guy who writes it.
Exactly.
You know, someone was asking me why we have Black History Month,
mm-hmm.
and what we don't need it anymore. My comment is, we will need Black History Month
mm-hmm.
until the people that write the history books include us in the history.
Mm-hmm. Accurately.
Accurately.
And factually.
Yes. In other words, like New Jersey, and to my knowledge, New Jersey is the only state that requires blacks and all ethnic groups to be included in the history books for the public schools in that state.
Mm-hmm.
Every state needs to have that. Once we get to that state, we may be able to eliminate Black History Month.
Right.
But we need to educate the public of the hardships that we've had to go through.
I say if you watch a movie, and we have Anton on the phone, and Anton, in just a second here, but I've often says that if you, in fact, feel it need to show who was the guy that painted the sign in a movie, you know, those trailers, you saw his name down there, then why wouldn't you introduce the name of a gentleman or a woman mm-hmm. of African-American descent in the annals of history.
Yeah,
it recorded. I mean, if a person feels it's important
exactly.
to put your name at the end of a movie,
exactly.
a trailer, and by the way, it could be a dumb movie.
Yeah.
A movie that barely got into the screen. So I think just on that, in my personal opinion, Black history and any other history of any people should be included.
Should be included.
Because we all, if we say we are part of this nation, then we should be applauded. Anyway,
well, you know,
and
history is made by the people.
Right.
And they all should be, because they all contribute.
His story or her story.
Yeah.
Yeah, her story, it should start being said. Anyway, Antoine, you there?
Oh, yes, I am.
Good morning. How are you?
Very good. Very good. Great, really. You know, I think ethnic and racial history should be that should be a subject forever studied by everyone in all schools. And, but that's not what I called about.
Okay. Well, talk to.
I was really curious about after the airmen left the service, were they able to become employed in the aviation field?
No.
And what?
Racism and segregation were still rampant in 1945. It was not until 1960 that blacks were able to be employed by the airlines. Now, of course, in between, there's certain of us who were able to work for the airlines, like Billy here.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead, Bill. Explain what happened.
In 1947... After the war, I went out and applied for a job with the airlines. I've forgotten it. Frontier Airlines was one of the airlines in the Midwest at the time. And they told me I wasn't qualified. I was as qualified as the white pilots they were hiring. They didn't want to tell me I wasn't qualified because I was black, but that's what they implied.
Yeah, exactly. Their racial attitudes.
Yes.
Just,
and so, my desire to fly, I went back in the Air Force. That's where I could fly, mm-hmm. and the Air Force had become a separate branch. And I was doing what I loved doing, flying, and the Air Force gave me that opportunity. But in 1950. I left the Air Force again. Now I got many hours of multi-engine time, and I thought, now they can't say I'm not qualified. And they found another reason to keep me out. So I went back in the Air Force again for the Korean War. Well, after the Korean War, I left the Air Force again. And guess what? In 1953... I was over the age limit. I was 29, and they wouldn't hire me. So I went back in the military.
Were they hiring white pilots and pilots?
Oh, yes.
All the time.
Yeah, and over 29.
Yes.
mm-hmm.
You know. So in 1957, I left the service again, wanting to break the barrier in aviation. I took a job as a crop duster. And I went to Central America spraying bananas. that job lasted until the end of 57 when a Canadian airline offered me a job. And so I went to Canada. But, you know, we often say...
Well, you had to leave the country to become employed.
That's right.
Yeah.
There were guys, TWA, for example... ran the airline for Ethiopia. It was really TWA.
Mm-hmm.
And Jimmy Clinton was flying for TWA, flying for the Ethiopian Airlines.
He was one of our primary instructors.
Yep. Mm-hmm. That was in 1957. But they weren't here in the U.S.
A tremendous amount of talent and training kind of just...
going to waste.
Went to squander.
Yeah. But after the Vietnam War, things, all of that changed because now we got the color barrier had been broken back in the 50s and 60s. They had black pilots out there. So they forgot about they. We had guys retiring from the military 50 years old going to work for the airlines.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, but 20 years earlier, I couldn't get a job with 2,000 hours at the age of 29.
Mm-hmm. Wow.
I sued a company in Pennsylvania.
Did you win?
Yes, I won.
Great.
You know, mm-hmm. the judge made them pay me 6 months' salary for not hiring me. Mm-hmm. I think I got something like $3,000 because this was back in the 50s.
Well, that was a fair, pretty penny back then.
It was a moral victory.
Right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I believe we've come a long ways. I met a young man recently flying for United, and he said he flew helicopters for the Army, never fixed wing. So you see how they've changed.
Uh-huh.
Uh-huh. Once you know how to...
Well, things have changed in this country. We now have a black president, mm-hmm. but, of course, that doesn't mean the racism is gone.
Oh, no.
You know, Colin Powell made a comment about a month ago. He said, we have a long, long way to go.
I agree.
Exactly. Yeah.
And hopefully we'll work together and get it accomplished.
All righty. Well, Antoine, thank you for calling and sharing your thoughts. And
thanks for your show.
Yeah, anytime. Keep us tuned in. And we're going to take a break here real quick. But, Bill, I'm glad Antoine called.
Yes, sir.
I had a song, and I don't know why I didn't bring it, but I knew there was a reason for me listening to it last night about 11:30. It was Brooke Benton, Bo Weaver song.
Bo yeah. Weaver song.
I didn't know you were a crop duster, so I got to tell you, folks, I'm going to start playing when you hear the Bo Weaver song. It's going to be in your memory and your honor. I have to. I sat there and I listened to it about three times last night thinking, maybe I ought to play this for some reason. But you've heard the song, right?
Yes.
Old Bo Weaver. Yeah. Where's all my crop dusting?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's exciting work, really.
Right.
You're down 2 feet off the ground putting those chemicals on those crops.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Most of it was in its natural state. Very poisonous. We couldn't handle
yes.
it.
Yes. Is there something?
Yeah. For example, we used to spray spinach in Texas with a chemical. A drop on your skin would kill you.
Was that nicotine? Or
no.
What was it?
I forget what it is now. But everybody that handled it were in rubber suits.
And you're up there flying the plane.
Yeah, I'm flying the plane with this chemical. And it's very effective for a short period of time. And inside of 30 minutes after being exposed to the air, it's harmless.
Wow. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, let's take a break here, and we'll be right back. This is the Carol Cox Show, 524-1080 at carolcox.com, carolcox.com.
Lieutenant Colonel Alexander Jefferson, the book Red Tail Captured, Red Tail Free, Memoirs of a Tuskegee Airman, Prisoner of War in Germany for 9 months, $32. Contact me, 18126 Brinker Street, Detroit, Michigan, 48234, or call me, 313-368-0674. Thank you.
This is Bill Holloman with the Tuskegee Airman Scholarship Fund. We send young people, deserving young people, to college. Please contact me, 206-963-5663 or 253-852-7237 at the address 9240 South 240th Place, Kent, Washington, 98030. Your donations are appreciated, helping send young kids to school. Thank you.
Right. Okay. Welcome back to the Carol Cox Show, Bill Holloman and Alexander Jefferson. Thank you, gentlemen, for taking the time and with spending with us.
Pleasure to be here.
Yeah, you know, going back a bit about the you, Bill, trying to get a job in the business, so I was sitting here thinking about an old joke, so I guess I'll overlay it.
Mm-hmm.
The black pilots would go in and put in for a job, and the test was, you know, and the white pilot would go in and put in for a job, and the requirement was to spell.
Mm-hmm.
You had to spell water if you were a white pilot, and, you know, W-A-T-E-R.
Good. Okay.
When it came to the black pilots, you had to spell chrysanthemum. So
what was that?
Automatically, you had to be twice as good, twice prepared,
so
twice educated.
Yeah.
Twice experienced.
Right.
That's it.
And
mm-hmm.
Triple aggressive,
exactly,
and patient. So, but
mm-hmm.
but you know, we don't dwell on that because, and I hope that young people out there. When we walk down through Chinatown, and I'm astonished at the number of people. We've come a long way. We as people,
yes.
Period. Black, white, Asian. And I see the light at the end of the tunnel, so mm-hmm. to speak. I see success. It was we as a human race. And watching the young people, the old people, run up to you guys and recognize you for what it is that... You are the ambassadors of hope, you know,
it
makes you feel good to see. It's okay. Adversity is not that bad. I mean, to be experiencing adversity because of your race is just sick on the part of the person that projects it on you. But we'll endure, I guess. I mean, we won't.
We shall survive.
You know.
But, you know, let me tell you some of the good things
mm-hmm.
that came out of racism.
Okay.
We are closer to each other. Alec and I would not have a 67-year friendship
unless it was...
We're like family.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. True.
Because of segregation
that bonded.
And racism. We were bonded. We had to stick together to overcome the racist attitude of our society.
Mm-hmm. That was it. Exactly. Exactly.
But isn't it heartwarming to see when you're at the yacht club and the gentlemen, everybody come up to share their stories and...
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
It suggests that we as a human race now seem to be getting... That finish line is right there at our grasp.
You see, the thing is, society sees people like Alec and I or the Tuskegee Airmen in general.
Mm-hmm.
Get together, and how close we are.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
But this
I don't believe as a unit,
mm-hmm.
the white veteran is that close.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that you know, guys,
they're close.
They're close. They have their friendships that they developed in the service.
Mm-hmm.
Let me explain something. All of our classes had training at Tuskegee Army Airfield. Those men, the first class graduated in March 42. I came out in January 44. Billy came out in
September
44. All of the men before us went to combat. And we also went to combat with them.
Mm-hmm.
The men behind me, we all went to combat together. And this formed a camaraderie that has persisted all these years. When you're trained with someone, you go to combat with someone.
It's like your college chum.
It's family.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
The white pilots were trained one place. The classes were broken up. They went to another base.
But there was a reason for that they ignored in training the black pilots.
That's it.
You could not be... The desire was not to be too close, so that when someone died,
mm-hmm.
there was not too much grief.
That's it.
We had a lot of grief.
You better believe it.
Because I knew my tent mate
mm-hmm.
when he was blown out of the sky.
That's it. Exactly.
I knew him for months. He wasn't just another soldier fighting next to me. You get the connection?
Faulkner right. was my tent mate. He was my upperclassman. All these upperclassmen, you knew them personally.
Mm-hmm.
And then you went to combat with them and have them. We had a camaraderie that still persists to this day.
Mm-hmm. And when my tent mate went down, I grieved.
Mm-hmm.
But I had to get over it.
Oh, yes. You had to survive.
Yep. Had to get over because you had a mission the next day.
Next day.
That's right.
And mm-hmm. we know in mm-hmm. war people die and are maimed.
But you know, war is
you know, people, Hollywood makes war look glamorous. War is not glamorous.
No, indeed.
It's terrible.
It's horrible.
And the deaths and the maiming of the people. And then talk about maiming. We need to work on our government
mm-hmm.
to take care of these veterans.
Mm-hmm.
Because these guys go out there and put their lives on the line and come back. They need help.
Mm-hmm.
They need
they put their life on the line. Our government has an obligation to take care of them. Give them the help they need.
Mm-hmm.
I hope under this new administration that the new director, of the Veterans Affairs will do what he said in his acceptance speech.
Uh-huh.
He will overhaul the Veterans Affairs.
Yeah, I volunteer in Detroit, the Veterans Hospital, to counsel these young men coming back from Afghanistan.
Iraq.
Iraq and again. And after 5 or 6 hours, I am completely discombobulated.
Mm-hmm.
Their emotions, post-stress, post-traumatic stress, it's frightening. I just can't take it. Now, I'm supposed to volunteer 2 days a week. I can't take but one day. 4 or 5 hours, I'm through.
And that's the reality and not the photo opportunity.
That's
what's
reality.
Going on behind
it's,
the scene
it's
at the veteran hospital.
Yeah. It's gut-wrenching.
So the public really don't know the magnitude of the impact that is occurring out there.
A young man said, we went into a building, it's dark, and there are some characters all clothed in black. We didn't know whether they were women, men, insurgents. We didn't even know who they were. And if we shot them, bingo, we're wrong. We're held, might be court-martialed.
Mm-hmm.
It is mind-boggling. It's crazy. But that's all part of war.
Yeah, that's war. And so it's what we do after the fact, I guess, and how we treat them to compensate for that exposure.
Yeah, I think we have an obligation.
Mm-hmm. We have an obligation.
And when you see the veterans suffering, you need to get on the phone, write the letters, tell your elected officials, take care of them. I attended a veterans meeting yesterday,
mm-hmm.
and we're talking about the veterans' loss of hearing, and it's they don't get compensation for it. They listen to aircraft engines that we didn't know was destroying their hearing.
That's right.
Standing next to that big gun when it goes off continually, they lost their hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And the VA representative said, "We can't give you something that's not in the law." You need to write to your elected official and tell Congress, include it in the law.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
How dumb does Congress have to be all these years after World War II? Hearing loss is a byproduct of the military.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Give them the, I can't hear the sounds of good music.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you're wasting your time playing a good symphony for me because I can't hear it.
Because of the exposure to the jet engines and the bombers.
And yet, Congress, the elected officials, are so dumb that they don't realize that was militarily incurred.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. So, you... Bill, you served in World War II.
Yes.
You served in the Korean War.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
The Vietnam War.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
That's a lot of exposure.
Oh, yes. But, you know, I like to joke about it and say it beat going to work.
Yeah, but you seem, you have your wits about you, and how did you keep your wits? I mean, maybe there's some, what
survival.
Did you do?
Survival.
It was a job, mm-hmm. and mm-hmm. I saw it not in World War II.
Mm-hmm.
I don't even know if I saw it in the Korean War. But by the Vietnam War, I saw my job as saving democracy. Mm-hmm. But the policies that we had, I disagreed with.
Mm-hmm.
Like Iraq, I didn't believe we should be in Vietnam.
Yeah,
you know, no. We were meddling in other people's affairs.
Mm-hmm.
Sure, it's nice to bring democracy to other countries. And because Vietnam, we had the UN behind it. We went into Iraq. We had the president behind it.
Yeah. Wait now. The president. Which
well,
George W.
The president at the time.
Yeah.
The time.
Now, the Tuskegee Airmen, changing subject, were honored by George W. Bush with the Congressional Medal of Honor.
Congressional Gold Medal.
Right.
Congressional Gold Medal.
Not the Congressional
right.
Medal of Honor.
Gold Medal.
There Congressional is. Gold
Did
Medal.
Did you get one?
No. All living Tuskegee Airmen got
it
one.
It was okay. Not presented to...
To any individual.
Okay.
It was presented to the organization
as a group. As a group.
Yeah. I asked that because...
And it's like the Congressional Gold Medal was presented to the American Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
As a group, not in no individual.
Uh-huh.
So when you hear someone say, I was... awarded the Congressional Gold Medal, he received a duplicate
right.
of the medal, or you know, a copy of the medal
mm-hmm.
as a member.
Mm-hmm.
As a member of the organization.
Congress did not give those individual medals. Some donor
mm-hmm.
paid for them from the Treasury.
That's right.
And presented them to us, not Congress.
Yeah, see,
they gave one medal,
right.
a gold medal. It's on exhibit at the Smithsonian.
But you never received it. So I wanted to clarify that because people mm-hmm. were asking me, didn't they receive it? So I thought I'd ask that, and then it's a misnomer.
See, this is how things change. Misunderstanding.
Right.
Misunderstanding.
So you never received personally a gold medal or a medal of honor from
no.
Congressional Medal.
It was issued to the organization as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
Alec was selected as one of the four that went up on the stage
mm-hmm.
When the president presented it.
Right.
And we all got to look at the gold medal.
Mm-hmm.
But
you didn't get it.
No. No, it was given to us by a donor.
Yeah. Well, I'm hoping that that in the future, if you're back in town and what have you, we come in again and share with us. I'd like to dispel some of the mistruth and
mm-hmm.
add to the truth.
Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
I like clear misunderstanding up too.
Mm-hmm.
History should contain facts and truth,
mm-hmm.
not myth.
Right.
But I'm not going to mention the ones I'm talking about.
But I really appreciate the time we spend. And, you know, you guys, you're a storybook, and since your entire life seemed to be, you know, you want to pick up the book and read. And I was there with, my wife and I spent some time with your wife, and just the history on all sides. I understand she... grew up and knew Martin Luther King personally, and just things that'll be mm-hmm. unreal. So you have, let me see here.
That's a coin.
This is the Tuskegee Airmen coin.
A replica
of it, 1941. Here,
that's the Congressional Gold. That's the Congressional Gold Medal, small coin that we can buy,
mm-hmm.
and is represented to the large one. See, the large one is about six inches in diameter
mm-hmm.
and about a quarter inch thick.
Mm-hmm.
And this small, the size of a
silver dollar.
Uh-huh.
Replica of the
And
gold
people
coin.
Can obtain those for it from...
They can buy these through the U.S. Mint.
Okay.
$3.75.
Yeah.
Through the U.S. Mint.
Well, I'm also...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let me make a comment before you close.
Okay.
The young people. You have wonderful opportunities out there. One of the things that we played a part in is opening up opportunity for young people. They can go as far as they want to go, as they prepare themselves for. The only limitation they have is themselves. Don't blame other people.
That's right.
For you not accomplishing
get up
your
off
goals.
Your knees.
Get up off your knees
and hustle.
And study.
Stay in school.
Amen.
Stay in school.
Well, yeah, we're winding down, but I feel like I'm missing something here, having to say bye and aloha. And I just, but there'll be other times, and keep us in mind, and we'll keep you in mind. And but what really is exciting about this is what you two have done in your time. I've watched you over the last week or so.
Mm-hmm.
You've said no to no one. The schools want you to come and talk. And you're just right there. And if you want to see these are two good-looking guys. I mean,
you
84 and 87 years old. And,
you have to keep in mind that life is beautiful. Only what you... No, what's an old saying? Garbage in, garbage out.
Right.
In life, you have to put in good things in order to get good things out of it. And to survive with a positive attitude. As we've often said, this is the best country in the world. It has the greatest opportunities. But it's up to you. Now, it's not perfect.
Right.
We still have a lot of crooks in this country.
Right.
But it's the best country in the world. We've often, as Chappie James said, this is my country. I will hold her hand. I'll protect her. But darn it, I'll make her treat me the way she should.
Mm-hmm.
This is why
and
we...
And remember, in God we trust.
Absolutely.
Right.
Above all. God bless.
Well, I really appreciate it. And we're going to post some pictures of you walking around Chinatown and looking at the strange fruits.
Yes.
And real quick, Bill.
Wait, what were those names? the one I cut off.
A rambutan. And that was sweet. Huh?
Yes.
And then the longan.
Longan.
The sweet longan, I should say. And, you know, they're dragon's eye or in the lychee-related family.
I've been to the Far East and had... fruit.
Yeah,
it's
my first time to crack into it.
And rewarding, huh? You're just
absolutely
awesome. You know, it's nice to watch you guys, and thanks all you guys out there, Captain Bartels with the United States Air Force, who came up to you and was excited to meet you. The gentleman from the Marines, he called himself a jarhead, as they all do, but the excitement you guys generate in these young and old men and women and ladies out there, the ladies run up to Bill and Alex, and they just falling head over heels over them. And Bill now, they all, oh, Bill, you have such beautiful eyes. So that's, you know, anyway. Staying serious here, but thank you so much for joining and sharing with us. And I didn't want to have conducting an interview. I wanted to just have a conversation. And next week I'll get back to the old grindstone, and got some interesting issues to talk about, the vessel that run aground, the military vessel, the impacts, and also the use of explosives by the Navy outside. But tune in, and for Kavika. Thomas Kavika, St. Germain. Your book is on its way, and Bob, your book is in the mail. So, aloha, and thank you, Bill Holloman and Alexander, Mr. Alexander Jefferson. Aloha and mahalo.